Good evening and welcome to this year's annual Halloween production by Theatre Makers. This year, Lights Out. Now before we start the show and get underway, a few household items. Firstly, please take note of the exits on either side of the stage and at the back of the auditorium. These are to be used in case of an emergency. Next, please note there is no smoking anywhere in the building as it's silly and dangerous. Also, do not take photos or videos during the performance and take this moment to switch off or turn to silent your mobile phones so as not to disturb others in the audience or cause the actors to fall off stage. Now, tonight's show is being presented using the unique and bleeding-edge technology called Imagino 2 to enhance your enjoyment and stimulate your mind. What happened to Imagino 1, you may ask? Well, we don't talk about Imagino 1 in respect to the poor souls lost that night to experimental theatre. But don't worry, we're pretty sure we've got the bugs out. Now sit back, relax, and cross your fingers as we enter again the Haunted Library. Good evening, fellow readers, and welcome to another episode of the Haunted Library, where we delve into the darkest corners of our supernatural shells, bringing you spine-tingling tales and scary stories from beyond the grave. For tonight's show, we've dug up from our deadly card catalogue a collection of horrific, fantastical encounters written by the great masters of terror. So sit back as we turn down the lights and tell you some tales to chill you, thrill you, and make you chuckle darkly. Lights Out. For our first spooky story, our dead librarians bring you the classic by Charles Dickens called The Signal.
It was late in the afternoon when I stood on the small bridge and looked down into the railway cutting, which had been dug by men many years ago to make way for the trains. The sides were steep and overgrown with trees. There was a signal box some 50 feet away from the entrance to the tunnel below me, in front of which stood a man in uniform holding a flag on a short pole. I called to him. "Hello, down below!" But instead of looking up to where I stood on the bridge, he turned and looked towards the entrance of the tunnel below and stared. Though I assumed he must simply have misjudged the direction from which my call had come, there was something about his manner that gave me pause, and a strange chill ran through me. As the man continued to gaze towards the tunnel in what seemed to be rapt attention, I tried again. "Hello, down below!" This time, he slowly looked up towards me. Having his attention, I called out, "Is there any path by which I can come down and speak to you?" For a long time, he looked at me without replying. Then he rolled up the red flag he was holding and pointed it towards the spot a short distance from where I stood.
Thank you,
I shouted and walked towards it. Sure enough, I found a notched out path and began to descend. As I did, the sunlight quickly disappeared within the confines of this narrow man-made landscape, and a dank, wet atmosphere grew around me, giving me the feeling that I was leaving the natural world. For his post was in a solitary and as dismal a place as I ever saw. The signalman was waiting for me at the bottom of the hill, standing between the railway lines, with a strange, nervous expression on his face.
Ah, there you are.
That's quite a steep path. Forgive the intrusion. But I saw you from above and was curious about your work.
I'm Agnes Moorhead.
As I approached him, he backed away, seemingly genuinely afraid. Why do you stare at me like that? You look at me as if you have a dread of me.
I was thinking perhaps I'd seen you before.
Where?
There, by the light.
He was pointing to the red warning light on one side of the tunnel.
My good fellow, what should I do there?
Is the light a part of your job?
Don't you know it is?
Why, no, I've never been here before. I swear it.
No, perhaps you haven't.
Sorry, I didn't mean to disturb you. You don't get many visitors.
No, I don't, miss.
This must be a lonesome post.
Oh, it's bitter cold down here.
Forgive me manners, miss. I've got a fire lit inside my signal box. Why don't we talk there?
That's much better. Thank you.
Now, what brings you down into this place, miss?
Well, I'm a journalist. I write a column called Interesting People in Unusual Occupations for the Daily News. When I was walking by, I saw you down here outside your signal box, and it struck me as something my readers would find fascinating.
Really? I'm not sure, miss. It's a fairly simple.
Have you got much work to do here?
Not much, really. It's mostly just changing the signals when needed, trimming the wicks, making sure the red light is lit, and attending to the messages which go up and down our telegram wires. It's not very taxing.
You sell yourself short, sir. You have a lot of responsibility for the safety of the passengers on the line.
You put your finger on it. It's the responsibility and duty. There's always something to be done. It's never finished. And these months of late... Excuse me, miss. Oh, there you are. That's my work done for now. Of no real interest to anyone but myself.
But I am interested in it, and so would be my readers. You say there's so little to do, but so much depends on it, does it not? An accident, on this stretch of the line, in the tunnel, would be terrible.
Indeed, miss. The worst of your nightmares would have trouble matching it, for within the confined space of the tunnel, the carriages pile into one another, killing so many instantly.
Oh, my, how dreadful. So, how do you occupy your mind? In between your duties, that is.
You see those books up there? I try to teach myself some maths, fractions, decimals, and a little algebra.
So you're a mathematician?
Indeed not, miss. It's just something which serves to pass the time.
Suddenly, an ashen look took over the signalman, and he rose from his chair. Looking out of the window of the box towards the tunnel. Is everything all right?
Sorry, miss. What were you saying?
Don't you ever feel lonely?
No, I'm used to it.
Do you spend all of your hours on duty down here, or can you take in the sun sometimes?
Oh, yes. In the midst of darkness, light persists. At certain hours of the day, there's less traffic on the line. Then I can walk up the path a little and poke my face into the sun. But I must always listen for the electric bell and watch the red light. So, though my head may be in the light, my mind is always down here in the shadows, listening.
You speak like a poet.
I was at one time a student of English literature and natural philosophy. I attended lectures and followed the pursuit of knowledge. But over time, I ran wild, misused my opportunities, and lost my place. But I've got no complaints. I've made my bed, and now I must lay in it.
In the discharge of his duties, he seemed remarkably exact and vigilant. He opened the door to the signal box and waved his flag to the driver as the train passed. After it had gone, he turned his head back towards the tunnel and the glowing red light and stared for many minutes. So I asked, "Is everything all right?"
"What? Oh, yes, miss. All is well."
But he sat back down with such an anxious expression on his face that I asked, "Forgive me for being so bold, but are you happy with your work?"
"I have been content for many years, miss. But now..."
"Please, tell me how it has changed." He answered me in that same haunted tone in which he had first spoken.
"I find myself these days troubled. Deeply troubled. Excuse me, it is difficult to speak of right now. Perhaps, if you come again, I'll tell you."
"I would like to, if you'll have me."
"I would like that."
"Then say when."
"I'll go off early in the morning, and I shall be on again at 10 tomorrow night."
"Then I will come at 11.
"I look forward to it."
"Now, it's a long trek to the hotel, and I must begin to get back."
"Of course. Come, I'll light the path as you ascend. By the way, before you go, could you answer me a question?"
"Of course."
"When you came here today, what made you cry, 'Hello, down below'?"
"Did I?"
"Those were the very words. I know them well."
"I guess I said them because I saw you below."
"For no other reason?"
"What other reason could I possibly have?"
"You had no feeling that they were conveyed to you in any supernatural way?"
"No."
"Do me a favor. When you come down tomorrow night, don't call out."
"Of course."
"I'll be waiting for you at the top of the path. Good night, miss."
So the next evening, punctual to my appointment, I reached the path as the distant clocks were striking 11. The signalman was waiting for me with his light. "Good evening, sir. You see, I have not called out."
"And I thank you for it."
We made our way down through the cold mist and into the warmth of his signal box.
"I'm glad you came, miss. You see, I have made up my mind that you shall not have to ask me twice what troubles me."
He spoke in a hushed whisper, as if trying to keep this secret between us.
"Yesterday, when I first heard you, I mistook you for someone else."
"Who? Someone who looks like me?"
"A year ago, on a moonlit night, I was sitting here on duty, when I heard a voice crying from outside, 'Hello, below there!' It startled me, and I went to look for who was calling. That's when I saw this ghostly figure of a woman standing by the red light near the tunnel. Her left arm was across her face, and her right arm was waving violently as if to say, 'For God's sake, clear the way!' I grabbed my lamp and, despite a growing fear, ran towards the figure, calling, "What's wrong? What has happened?" But she just stood bathed in the red light, saying nothing. And then, when I was within feet of her, she vanished.
Into the tunnel?
I don't know, but her appearance had so shaken me with worry and alarm that I ran back to my signal box, and I telegraphed both ways. An alarm has been given. Is anything wrong? The answer came back that all was well.
How deeply mysterious. So when you heard me call, it brought back the memory of this apparition.
Yes. But there's more to it, miss. A week later, the regular afternoon train was coming down the tunnel. I was standing in my usual place to wave the driver on when I noticed that one of the carriage windows was open and someone was slumped, hanging out of it. I immediately signaled to the driver to stop, and he cut the engine and slammed on the brakes, making the train come to a screeching halt. And as I got closer, I could hear the screams of the passengers as they looked down from the train at the body of a young lady lying dead on the track.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
We brought her broken, bloody body in here and laid it down on the floor.
At the mention of it, a chill ran through me, as if a frozen finger was tracing out my spine.
May I ask, miss, what brought you here?
Nothing in particular, really. I left my hotel yesterday in the early afternoon with no more of a plan than to explore the local countryside. Then I came across the bridge and looked down.
You were not drawn?
Not that I know. I could think of nothing more to say, and so we both sat in silence. As much as I felt moved by his story, a more rational part of my mind wondered whether the intense loneliness of the signalsman post had not caused him to imagine the ghostly cry. After all, the setting was perfect. A moonlit night in an unnatural valley where the wind blows constantly out of the mouth of the tunnel, making the telegram wires sing in its wake as it blows through the trees. What more perfect canvas could there be for his fevered imagination to place the finishing touch of a ghostly woman in the tunnel's scarlet light? Was that the only time you saw her?
I wish it was, miss, because then I could put this whole thing down to imagination. But there's more.
Has she appeared to you again?
But a week ago, at night.
Once again standing at the red light?
Yes.
What did she do?
She pantomimed as before, "For God's sake, clear the way!" But this time, with even more passion. Once more, I felt drawn to her and moved towards the apparition, only to have her melt away like mist as soon as I got near. Since then, I had no peace or rest, my nerves on edge, waiting for the next time she calls me, in hopes of discerning her intent.
Yesterday evening, when I was here, did she summon you?
Yes.
How does she beckon you?
It starts with a ghostly crying.
And you're sure it isn't the regular bell?
No. The spectre's ring is a vibration of the air and owes nothing to the material.
I didn't hear anything.
You wouldn't, miss. It's only meant for me.
Last night, you got up twice and opened the door?
I did.
That's when the ghost rang?
Yes.
And the spectre was there when you looked out?
It was. And now, the spectre has come again, and I still have no clue what I can do about it. What if this time it's a crash in the tunnel? How many more people can die? I am, Lord help me, only a lowly signalman. I can't keep raising the alarm and telegraphing that there's danger on the line when I can't give them a reason. They will think me mad and let me go.
I pitied him so. Such a conscientious man, tortured by the responsibility of having so many lives at stake. Now, in danger of becoming lost in his delusion. Then in an instant, the bell broke the moment.
You'll excuse me, miss.
His face became calm, and he went about his work. Well, for whatever reason she has chosen to appear to you, I cannot think of a better man to perform his duties and look after his charges.
You are kind to say so, miss.
We spoke for a while longer, and I agreed to keep him company the next night, which seemed to calm him. And so I made my way back to my hotel, my mind spinning from all that the signalman had told me. As I ascended the pathway, I could not help looking back towards the tunnel and the red light, unable to shake the feeling that its scarlet beam was watching me, a notion which invaded my sleep and coloured my dreams. From the nightmare just before dawn, drenched in sweat, and spent much of the day wondering what to do about the signalman. How could I help him? For he was a decent man, vigilant in his duties, who was in danger of being swallowed whole by his fears. I decided to take him to a friend of mine who was a doctor. Perhaps he might have some advice on how we could cure the signalman of his belief that he was being haunted. The sun was not yet set when I began to walk to the signal box. The evening was lovely, and I was in good spirits, for I had a plan to help my new friend. But when I arrived at the path above the railway cutting, I looked down and saw something which dashed my mood and froze my soul. For standing, directly in front of the red light, was the ghostly figure. A sense of guilt and dread gripped me. I shouldn't have left the signalman alone the night before. I flew down the path with all the speed I could muster. When I arrived at the bottom, I saw that there was a small group of men standing near the tunnel entrance. I realized that the figure I'd seen must have been one of these workers, who were all bathed in the signal light. A tarpaulin was on the ground near them, and the men were talking amongst themselves. One of them noticed my arrival and quickly came towards me.
You'd best not come any closer, miss.
What is the matter? I asked.
Man has died, miss.
Dear God. Not the man belonging to that box.
I'm afraid so. Did you know him?
I had just met him in the last few days. May I see him?
Oh, I wouldn't suggest it, miss.
I appreciate your concerns, but I insist. He took me over to the group surrounding the tarp and lifted a corner.
It was fast, miss. He can't have felt much pain. As you can see, his face is quite composed.
How did this happen?
He was cut down by my train engine.
But he was such a meticulous man.
No man in England knew his work better.
So how was he hit by the train?
I'm not sure, miss. I was coming round the curve in the tunnel when I saw him at the entrance. There was no time to slow my speed, but I knew him to be very careful, so I did not worry much. I sounded the whistle and blew it to warn him. but he didn't seem to take heed of it. So I shut it off and began shouting as loud as I could.
What did you say?
I kept calling, "Hello there! Look out! Look out! For God's sakes, clear the way!" Waving my arm to the last, but it was no use. I'm sorry, miss.
I wouldn't despair, sir, for I fear there was no way he could escape this appointment.
Appointment?
With death.
Our next delicious tale is by Rod Serling and is called Nothing in the Darkness. Welcome to the world of Gladys Cooper, an elderly woman in the last years of her life, living alone in a crime-infested neighborhood. She's hiding in the basement of this broken-down, decrepit old building, whose walls and ceiling are rotten with age and neglect. It's a world of her own making, where she's boarded up the windows and doesn't answer the door, in a desperate attempt to keep at arm's length the outside world.
What's that?
Police! You two, stop!
Christ, it's the police!
Stand still and put up your hands. Come and make me!
Jesus, Jimmy, you shot a copper.
I can't go back to prison, Jane.
We've got to get out of here. Come on.
Oh, God, I've been hit. Need to find some help. One of these houses must have someone. Open up. This is the police. I need help. Open up, police!
It's him. Be quiet. Not a sound.
I need help.
You can't let him in. He's trying to trick you. Move away from the door. Be quiet.
Is there someone in there?
Oh, dear.
I can hear you inside.
Go away!
Open the door.
I can't open it.
Why can't you?
Leave me alone!
I've been shot.
You're lying to me.
Please, I'm bleeding badly.
You can't fool me.
I don't understand.
You're trying to trick me. You're no policeman.
My name is Officer Garcia. What's your name, ma'am?
Oh, dear.
Thank God, lady.
Don't move. I'll close the door.
I don't think I can move.
What do you want?
Please call for an ambulance.
I'm sorry.
Don't you understand? I need a doctor.
But I haven't got a telephone.
At least help me inside.
You can't ask me to do that.
Please, please.
Oh, he's fainted. Officer?
What? Where am I?
You're in my flat. I brought you inside.
You're the lady that helped me?
Yes.
How long have I been out?
Just a while. No, don't get up, officer. You stay on the bed and conserve your strength.
I guess I will. It's so dark in here. All the windows are boarded up. What happened?
Nothing. I did it myself a long time ago now.
Why would you do that?
Oh, I have my reasons. We all have our reasons for doing things, don't we? Why would you want to be a policeman? To be in a job where people try to kill you? Why would you want to court death like that?
Court death? I don't know if I'd put it like that. I do it because there are some jobs that just need to be done. You dressed my wound? Thanks. You probably saved my life. When the doctor gets here...
I didn't call for one. I told you, I don't have a phone.
Couldn't you go to one of the neighbours?
There aren't any.
Come on, everyone has neighbours.
Not me. They've all moved away. Trucks came and took their furniture. First one, and then the others.
But there has to be someone.
No, not that I know of. I don't have a great deal of contact with the outside world. I haven't for some time. I couldn't even tell you who the Prime Minister is.
Really?
And even if I could call, I couldn't take a chance and let them in.
Why?
Too dangerous.
Dangerous to let them in? For you?
Yes.
You let me in?
I didn't have a choice. You might die. So I took a chance and, well, I'm still alive.
Of course you're still alive. What were you afraid of?
I told you, I can't let anyone in. Don't you see? It might be him.
Who?
Mr. Death.
Is this a person?
Of course not. Just looks like us. Oh, he's clever. Once he said he came from the gas company. Then last week he claimed to be a contractor hired by the city. He said this building was condemned, that I'd had to leave. It was my final chance. But I knew who he was. He wanted my soul. But I kept the door locked, and after a while he went away. Mr. Death can't fool me.
Do you mean Death?
Yes.
As in the Grim Reaper?
That's him. I know it sounds crazy, but it's true. Would you like some tea? At first, I couldn't be sure. It was a long time ago when I first saw him. I was taking a bus across town. There was an old woman sitting in front of me knitting. Socks, I think. Here's your tea.
Thank you.
Then this young man got on. He didn't say anything. He just smiled and sat down. I could see in her face she was upset. I couldn't understand why. He seemed like a nice young fella, not bothering anyone. He even helped her when she dropped her yarn on the floor. He picked it up and handed it to her. Then he rang the bell and got out at the next stop. The rest of us stayed on till the bus reached the end of the line. As we all got off, the driver called out for her to leave, but...
What?
She was dead.
But you said yourself she was an old woman.
But he touched her hand when he gave her back the yarn.
But that doesn't mean anything. It could be just coincidence that the man had been there.
No, it wasn't.
How do you know?
Because I've seen him other times people have died. Always he was someone you wouldn't suspect. One time he was a taxi driver at the scene of a traffic accident. He reached down to check the person, and once he touched them, the life just left them like water pouring out of a bottle. Another time he was a travelling salesman. A lady across the road opened her door, and later that night she was found dead.
Ma'am, I understand it's upsetting to be around death, but...
You're wondering why I could see him and that no one else could? It's obvious, because my time is coming to an end.
But if you know what he looks like, then why be afraid? You could avoid him.
Because I can't be sure. His face is always different.
How about when you go out?
I never go out.
Never?
I haven't been out for years.
Well, what do you do about food?
A boy delivers it. I leave him money and a list, and I always wait until he's gone away before I unlock the door.
How can you live like this?
But if I don't live like this, if I let my guard down even for a moment, he'll get in. I know he will.
Ma'am.
Don't be sorry for me. I was young once.
People said I was pretty. All the time I was outdoors and in the sunlight. My mother said I'd spoil my fine complexion, but I didn't care. But now that I'm old, I'd rather live in the dark than not live at all. What's wrong?
It hurts.
Maybe you should get some rest.
I do feel tired.
You rest then. I won't let anything happen to you.
Thank you. I'm so sleepy.
I'll take care of you. I'll be here when you wake up.
Where was that flat? Ah, here it is, 15B. Hello? Hello? Anyone in there?
He's back.
Lady, are you in there?
The man from last week.
Anyone in there?
No.
Oh, I don't believe this, lady. What are you still doing here?
Sorry, I can't talk. I'm rather busy.
This woman's gonna kill me. This is Charlie Camilleri. I came by last week and you promised that you'd be out of here by today.
Really? It must have slipped my mind.
This is not a joke. I got me orders.
I'm sure you do.
Open up.
I can hear you fine with the door closed.
Well then, hear this, lady. I've got a crew and equipment coming in an hour to pull this building down.
You can't. It's my home.
I'm just trying to do my job. I just clear the ground so that other people can build. It's got to come down to make room for a new one. I'm surprised it's still standing. Well, that's life, isn't it? The old makes room for the new.
I won't.
I can see how you could get attached to a place. But when a building is old, it's dangerous.
You're the dangerous one, Mr. Death.
Mr. Death? I'm not a monster, lady. I've got a heart just like everybody else. People get the idea that I get some kind of kick from tearing stuff down. But that ain't the way it is. Now, if you've got any possessions you want to keep, I'd move them out. I'll help you. But I can't fool around any longer.
Go away!
Open up! What's the sense of keeping a door locked that won't be even here in an hour? Now look, I'll be trying to go easy, but if you insist on staying here, I'll have to call a policeman.
Of course! There's no need, the police are already here. Wake up, officer. You tell him he can't come in. Explain to him. Tell him the reason I can't go out there. Oh, you'll help me, won't you?
Who are you talking to?
Officer Garcia. He's my friend.
Then open the door and let me speak to him.
Oh, please wake up. You have to help me.
I can't waste any more time, lady. I'm sorry, but if you're still here when the crew arrives, we're going to break down the door. I'm sorry.
Why didn't you help me?
You know why.
I thought you understood.
I do.
I let you in. I helped you.
You did.
You were shot and I helped you.
Did you see me get shot?
No. It was you all the time. But why? The moment I let you inside, you could have taken me. But you were nice. You made me trust you.
I had to make you understand.
I understand. You tricked me.
But am I really so bad? Am I really so frightening? You've talked to me. You've confided in me. Have I tried to hurt you?
No.
It isn't me you're afraid of. You understand me. What you're afraid of is the unknown. Don't be afraid.
But I am afraid.
Trust me. It's time to rest.
I don't want to die.
Give me your hand. You see, no shock, no engulfment, no tearing asunder. What you feared would come like an explosion is like a whisper. What you thought was the end is just the beginning.
When will it happen? When will we go?
Go? We have already begun.
Our next story is from that chilling master of the macabre, Mr. Edgar Allan Poe, and the Tell-Tale Heart.
Very, very dreadfully nervous I have been and am. But why do you say that I'm mad? The incident had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them. Above all, my sense of hearing was acute. I heard many things in heaven, and I heard many things in hell. How, then, am I mad? Observe how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It's impossible to say when the idea first entered my mind, but once it did, it haunted me day and night. Understand, I had no malice towards her. I loved the old woman. She had never wronged me. She had never said an unkind word or an insult. For her money, I had no desire. But, as time went on, I think it was her eye that made me do it. Yes, it was this. One of her eyes resembled that of a vulture, a pale blue eye with a film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold. And so, by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old woman, and thus rid myself of the eye forever. Now, because of this, you fancy me mad. But you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded, with what caution, with what foresight, with what dissimulation I went to work. I was never kinder to the old woman during the whole week before I killed her. I carried on as normal, caring for her everyday needs, cooking, cleaning, and spending time with her until she went to bed. Then around midnight, when I was sure she was asleep, I went to her bedroom door and opened it very, very slowly, until it was large enough for me to begin to put my head in. It took me an hour to just get in far enough so that I could see her. Would a madman have been so wise as this? Then cautiously, oh so cautiously, I opened the lantern and let a single thin yellow ray fall onto the floor. Then slowly I moved the beam of light towards the bed where she lay on the other side of the room, starting at the foot and making my way up her torso until I reached her face and the source of my disgust, her vulture eye. But the eye was always closed, and so it was impossible to do the deed, for it was not the old woman who vexed me, but her evil eye. I did this for 7 long nights. And each morning after, I entered her room and asked in a hearty tone, "I hope you slept well." And we would begin our day together, leaving her with no suspicion that every night, just at midnight, as she slept deeply, I was waiting to see her pale blue vulture's eye and kill her. On the 8th night, I was even more cautious in opening the door and entering her room. I could scarcely contain my feelings of triumph, power, and sagacity. There I was, in the darkness of her bedroom, and she had no idea of my presence. I chuckled, and then the old woman sprang up in bed, crying out,
"Who's there?"
I froze in place, not moving a muscle, scarcely breathing. She began to moan quietly to herself, a mantra over and over, as if trying to allay her own fears, her voice filled with the dread which arises when you feel death approaching.
"It is nothing but the wind in the chimney, or a mouse crossing the floor. It is nothing but the wind in the chimney, or a mouse crossing the floor."
Which left us at a standoff. Slowly, over time, her mumbling subsided into silence as she tried to detect my presence, to be replaced by a low, dull thump, thump, thump. You see, my heightened sense of hearing was picking up the old woman's heart beating in the darkness. The old woman's terror must have been extreme, because the beating grew louder and louder. An anxiety gripped me that a heartbeat could be heard by a neighbor. So in desperation to finish the deed, I opened the lantern. This time, fortune was with me, for its beam fell directly onto the open, pale blue vulture's eye. It was open, wide, wide open, revealing all of its sickening blue and the hideous opaque, ghostly white veil over it, sparking my rage like a fireworks fuse being lit. After that, the old woman's fate was sealed. She got off but a single blood-curdling scream before I leapt and slapped her to the floor. I put my hands around her throat and squeezed. Calmness possessed me, like ice water in my veins, as her body slowly went limp and life drained out of her. But even then I was cautious, oh so cautious, and kept my hands around her throat for another quarter of an hour before I removed it and examined the corpse. I checked her pulse and I could hear no heartbeat. She was stone cold dead, and the vulture's eye would trouble me no more. Now, would a simple madman take the care I took to conceal the body? This I did in an old tin bath where I dismembered the corpse so that there would be no stain of any kind, no blood spot whatsoever. I had been too wary for that. After I sawed off the head, I then went for the arms. And finally, the legs. Now, would a madman have been so persistent, so thorough in his task? No, I think not. I wrapped the torso and its accoutrements in the old woman's sheets and took the old woman's corpse down into the sitting room. There, I carefully pulled up three planks from the floor of the chamber. Put the remains into the cavity and then replaced the board so cleverly, so cunningly, that no one could have detected anything. By the time I had finished my labours, it was 4 o'clock, and I could finally lay down to rest. For a second, I panicked in fear.
Open up!
Then I calmed myself. I'm coming, officer! After all, I had prepared for this and went downstairs. Good evening, officers. Please come in.
Are you Corman?
Yes, I am.
I'm Inspector Tarr, and this is Sergeant Feather.
How may I help you?
We've had a complaint from your neighbours about hearing a violent scream from this house in the early hours. They were concerned that something might have happened to the owner, one Mrs. Rosemary Bramford, and asked us to check on her.
Oh, my goodness! How embarrassing! I hadn't realized. Yes, indeed, there was a scream, but it was mine. I had a terrible, terrible nightmare and awoke in such a fright that I must have yelled the house down. It's a shame the neighbours did not come and ask me themselves.
I see. And where is your mistress?
She's not here.
Where is she?
She left earlier this evening to visit relatives.
Really? Where are they, Mr. Corm?
She's staying with her sister Madeline in the country and will not return for a week.
The neighbours were sure they heard a woman scream.
Should we take a look around, sir?
Please do. I have nothing to hide. Let me show you the place. I bade them search, search well. I showed them each room from the basement to the attic, including the scene of the crime, my mistress's bedroom, where all her treasures and jewelry were safely in place, secure and undisturbed. Then we went downstairs and sat in the parlour, and while they continued their questions, I was at ease and answered with confidence, plating my own seat upon the very floorboards under which reposed the corpse of the old woman. Eventually, they seemed satisfied. My manner had convinced them, and the inspector said,
"All seems to be in order, Mr. Corman. We'll be getting along. I am sorry to have bothered you."
Then in hubris, in the wild audacity of my triumph, I bade them stay. "Can I offer you both a glass of wine, in thanks for coming out at such a late hour to look after the safety of my mistress?"
"Why, that's most generous. Thank you."
I opened one of my mistress's finest and poured us all a glass. And we continued chatting, now about more familiar things. My audacity even led me to make a toast to all the hard-working policemen who make our lives safer.
"You're very kind, Mr. Corman. If only all our calls could end this pleasantly. Right, Sergeant?"
"Indeed, sir."
We continued on in this pleasant manner for a while. But then I began to hear a sound. A distinct, low, dull, persistent thud. I began to fear that the officers would hear it, and I wished them gone. But I could not rush them, since the inspector now insisted we have a second glass to...
"Drink to the health of the mistress of this house."
The pounding grew louder, and my panic rose. But I could do nothing to move the officers along. So I tried to shrug it off and talked more quickly, more vehemently. I began walking up and down in heavy strides over the spot where my mistress lay in pieces. But still the sound increased. I spoke louder and louder, laughing like a lunatic to some puerile joke the sergeant told us. But the noise increased, growing louder and louder and louder. And still the inspector and the sergeant chatted pleasantly. Was it possible they did not hear it? How could they not? No, they heard it. They knew. They were just making a mockery of my horror, torturing me in the moment, getting ready to pounce and arrest me. I was twisting in the wind like a branch in the storm, getting more and more hysterical, and still the sound increased. There was nothing I could do. I could bear their hypocritical smiles no longer. Anything was more tolerable than this derision. Anything was better than this agony. For the sound was getting louder and louder and louder. So I shrieked at the top of my voice to be heard. Torture me no more! I admit the deed! Tear up the planks! There's where you'll find the old woman's corpse! Please, 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 just stop the beating of her hideous heart.
And now, a genius storyteller, Art Obler, brings us The Diving Bell. Citizens of Mordoria, listen. I have an important announcement. This morning, our great and fearless leader, Novistrana, will board an experimental diving bell in an attempt to break the world record set by the Americans. So let's hail our supreme leader's continuing glory on the international stage and the frontiers of scientific discovery. All hail the supreme leader! Hail!
Very calm.
Yes, Your Excellency.
Will it be the same under the water?
It will, Your Excellency.
I see. I'm sure it'll all be very amusing.
I hope so, ma'am. The captain ought to have everything ready by now, Your Excellency. I'll go see...
No. Just a moment, Doctor.
Yes, Your Excellency.
You're much too impatient, my dear young friend. One of the great joys of an experience is to savour it before it happens.
As you say, Your Excellency.
So, the current record is held by Beban Barton?
Yes, Your Excellency. It stands at 3,028 feet.
Uh-huh. And how far is the bottom?
4,000 feet, Your Excellency.
Deeper than anyone's ever gone before. It'll all be very amusing.
It's time to go?
I assure you that the sea will wait for us.
But I only thought that...
Don't think so much, my young friend. Thinking is an unnecessary pastime. Did you know there were those of the inner party who thought this descent an unnecessary risk to my life? But I insisted. I'm sure it will all be very amusing.
Hail, Supreme Leader!
Hail.
Your Excellency, we are ready.
Well, Captain, you too are impatient, eh?
I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't mean to.
Now, don't splutter. Come along, then. We'll go aboard your diving bell and begin our little adventure.
Attention!
Hail, Supreme Leader!
Hail.
You see, Your Excellency, we are quite ready.
Is everything to your satisfaction, Doctor?
The winch runs smoothly now.
Yes, sir.
Telephone communication has been tested.
Tested over 20 times.
Searchlight.
Working perfectly. I assure you everything has been checked, Doctor.
Did you put in the extra oxygen tank, Captain?
Yes, I believe.
I don't want you to believe, I want you to know. Make sure at once.
Yes, Doctor, at once.
Well, your thoroughness is exemplary, Doctor.
With the depth we are going to, nothing can be left to chance. The pressures down there are almost beyond imagination. Everything must be perfect, particularly on this dive. Your life is precious to the state.
You're as cautious as they said. I like that. Until now, the world's press has known me only as a great political leader, the first woman to lead a country. But by nightfall, they'll herald me as a record breaker in the world of science, eh, Doctor? In the world of men.
If all goes well, Your Excellency.
You have doubts?
Just that no one can predict the ways of the sea.
True, but I have faith in this diving bell. I make a habit of keeping up with the sciences. The Oceanus has already made 30 descents. The cable which will lower us into the ocean can hold the weight of 50 diving bells. Also, the crew have all been especially trained and are hand-picked for their loyalty, which, with my life in their hands, will ensure they'll be particularly careful on this descent. You see, I too am cautious. Oh yes, indeed, my rise to leadership has been based upon making sure that the unpredictable doesn't happen, if you understand my meaning. Doctor?
There is no doubt of it, ma'am.
I'm talking quite frankly with you, Doctor? Well, it pleases me to do so. For a few hours, we'll be locked up in that steel ball. There's no reason you shouldn't know a little bit about your leader, is there?
You honour me, ma'am.
All ready now, sir.
Shall we go now, Your Excellency?
Of course, of course.
Careful, Your Excellency. The deck is quite wet here.
Oh, thank you, Captain. You're very thoughtful.
Thank you, ma'am. Attention!
No more formalities. Let the crew go about their business so we can get started.
Yes, Your Excellency. As you were, then.
Aye, aye, sir.
Would you like to get into the diving bell first, Your Excellency?
No, after you. Quite a small doorway, isn't it? How fortunate we're both small and lean, Doctor. Didn't Julius Caesar fear thin men? Said they had a hungry look which made them dangerous.
I don't know much about that sort of thing, ma'am.
Not one for the theatre, Doctor. Never mind.
Yes, ma'am.
Not a lot of dignity getting into this steel ball, eh, Captain?
Shall I help you, ma'am?
No, I'll be all right. Are you ready for me?
Come in, ma'am.
Careful, Your Excellency.
You're all right, ma'am?
Yes, of course I am. Well, what are we waiting for?
Captain?
Aye.
Close her up.
Aye, sir.
Your ears, cover your ears.
Huh?
The bolts that hold the door have to be tightened by hammering. It's all right now, ma'am. They're done.
Well, what an infernal din. My ears. Wasn't there any other way?
Hammering is the only way to get a watertight seal, ma'am.
All well down there, sir?
All well.
What's that?
The telephone, ma'am. They'll communicate with us from the deck every 3 minutes. If one of us doesn't answer within half a minute, the orders are to pull us up.
An excellent safety precaution.
Now we're being lifted out to the end of the room and then they'll let us go.
We're under?
Yes, I'll turn the oxygen on.
The light is so green underwater.
Yes, but as we go down, it'll become blue and then get darker and darker until around 2,000 feet, where we'll be in a blackness that makes it seem like eternal night.
Eternal night under the water. Very amusing.
Thank you.
there, sir?
All well.
How far down are we?
About 1,100 feet, ma'am.
It's hard to believe it.
There is almost a quarter of a mile of water trying to crush us.
Don't you think the word crush is inappropriate at this time?
My apologies, Your Excellency.
You were right. The water's turned the strangest blue.
A few more hundred feet and there'll be no more colour, ma'am.
What is that out there? It lights up? It looks like it has its own electric power.
That small flat fish, it's a luminous species.
How very amusing.
They can eat organisms almost as large as they are. I'll turn on the searchlight and you'll see.
No, never mind.
As you say, ma'am.
All well down there, sir?
All well.
Ask him how far down we are.
How far down, Seaman?
1,350 feet.
We make good time, eh?
Yes, ma'am. They lower us very quickly.
Well, perhaps when we reach the end of the cable, we can chat about life and death deeper than anyone has before. Some philosophy beneath the waves.
Indeed, ma'am.
How very amusing. You were right. It's pitch black out there now. How mysterious. I thought I saw something out there.
What, ma'am?
Something. Then it was gone in a moment.
I'll turn on the searchlight.
No. No, don't. Tell me, Doctor. In your other trips, have you seen anything strange out there?
Yes, ma'am. One time, it seemed as if something enormous moved within the darkness.
And? What do you think it was?
I couldn't say, ma'am. But I'll never forget it.
How very amusing.
All well down there, sir?
Oh, tell him yes, 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 and stop annoying us.
All well, and don't bother...
Sir, you've reached 3,028 feet.
We've reached the depth of the old world record.
3,030 feet.
Have we broken it?
Yes, ma'am. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Doctor. Thank you. How very amusing. That'll give the world of politics something to talk about. All right, Doctor, let's go back up.
3,035.
Doctor, did you hear me? Order them to haul us up.
3,040.
Doctor, are you out of your head? I gave you an order. Have them pull us up. What? What happened? Did something hit us?
We just landed at the bottom of the sea. That's all.
Why did you ignore my orders? I said to go up. What was that lever you threw?
What lever?
I saw you throw a lever.
It's nothing.
Don't use that tone with me, Doctor.
What tone is that?
Haven't you forgotten something?
What?
My title.
Here, at the bottom of the sea.
What's gotten into you? Are you out of your mind completely? Now signal the ship and have them pull us up. Your little adventure is over. Didn't you hear me? I said signal the ship.
How?
Telephone them.
The telephone doesn't work.
Get out of the way. Hello? Hello up there? Hello? Answer me. Hello? Blast you, answer me.
They can't answer. The wire's torn loose.
Well, can't you fix it?
I can. But I won't.
What is this?
Is it all still very amusing?
What have you done?
I've ensured our deaths.
Did you forget that when they call us on the radio and we don't answer, they'll pull us up immediately?
Will they? It's been more than 3 minutes since the last signal. If what you say is true, why aren't we moving?
They'll pull us up.
No, they won't.
Shut up!
Because I released the cable between ourselves and the ship.
I don't believe you.
We're down here to stay, Your Excellency. Quiet as a tomb down here, isn't it?
Who sent you to do this?
We have about 40 minutes of oxygen left.
Was it the deputy chairman, Kubrick?
It'll be a slow death. Eventually our lungs will gasp for one more breath of air, but there won't be one. Don't worry, though. We'll pass out before then from carbon monoxide poisoning.
I order you to answer me.
Orders? There's just you and me, Your Excellency.
No way a young, empty-headed fool like you is going to kill me. Come on! Your father was a much beloved member of the inner party.
Why don't we have that little chat? Some philosophy at the bottom of the sea. After all, you and I are about to breathe our last together as equals. Any thoughts where we meet death, Your Excellency?
Oh, you'd like that, wouldn't you? Me on my knees, weeping, begging for my life. Never! You can't be naive enough to think that when I'm dead, the people would just rise up. Do you think I came to power alone? The party will crush your rebellion.
My rebellion?
You'll be dying for nothing. Your death will be meaningless.
Not if I kill you.
Why? Why do you do this? Are you a spy?
A spy?
Stop it! I will not be humiliated.
Why would I humiliate you, Your Excellency?
What do you want?
Nothing you'd understand.
Tell me, I can be gracious and forgive this act of treachery. Just give up your accomplices and get us to the surface.
Even now, you try to bluster your way out of it.
You could have easily shot me when we were on the surface, but instead, you waited until we were in this contraption. Why?
That would be telling.
It was revenge. You wanted to be close to me, so you could see my face when you sprung the trap.
So, what did it feel like to condemn so many to death?
Feel like?
Yes. What did it feel like? Were you excited? Aroused? Consumed by it?
It was simply something that had to be done.
And you were perfect for it.
I rose to the occasion.
You volunteered.
I stepped up when no one else would. Order had to be restored.
Like a frenzied shark once the blood was in the water.
We could not stop.
Until enough blood was spilt.
Until the job was done. You do not know what we faced. My leadership brought peace to the land. The country was in a bloody civil war and on the verge of collapse. Your father was part of our revolution. He was a loyal friend and ally in the early days. He helped create our party. A party which fed and clothed you, sent you to the best schools. What did you ever lack for?
A mother.
Getting harder to breathe.
The air is already getting thin. Won't be long now.
Didn't you add a spare tank?
Empty. Just a prop to make you feel safer.
Did you see that?
What?
It was a tentacle. It passed across the porthole.
Nothing can live at this depth.
You said yourself you'd seen things in the darkness.
I was winding you up to scare you.
You didn't hear that.
What?
Something huge brushed against the outside of the diving bell.
I didn't hear anything.
Something is out there in the darkness.
Let's turn on the searchlight and see.
No, don't.
Your mind is playing games.
Can't you feel it? Something monstrous is out there.
Perhaps it's your past catching up with you.
So thick. It's getting hard to focus.
We're living on fumes, Your Excellency. Any last words?
You mentioned your mother.
At last the penny drops.
What happened to her?
She bled out on the delivery table giving birth to me.
How did you find out?
After my father passed, I went through his papers and found some love letters between the two of you when you were a rising star and my father was very ambitious.
He was a passionate man.
The affair shattered my mother's heart, and terrified of losing him to you, she promised him the one thing she knew you would not give him, a child, even though the doctors had warned her against it.
He often spoke of wanting a child.
Once my mother was dead, he lost all interest. I only knew his indifference. I was kept out of duty, not because of love.
He was grieving. He told me he loved you.
Liar!
Can't you hear them? Those voices circling us.
Who? More phantoms?
All the souls whose lives I took. They've come to see me choke to death on stale air and my own puke. Oh, you think I'm going to sit here until the dark comes crawling inside here and steals my last breath? No, 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 I'll smash the glass, let the water crush me. I'll be dead and that'll end it.
All well down there, sir?
The ship?
All well, take us up.
We're moving. You lied.
My orders to the crew were to leave us alone when we hit the bottom.
And the broken telephone?
I reconnected it when you weren't looking.
Then, you didn't really mean to kill me.
All well down there, sir?
All well.
What are you playing at?
Playing at, ma'am.
Why did you go through all this?
To hear your confession.
My breakdown, that was nothing. I was hysterical, babbling for lack of air. And for that, I will have you hanged on live television. It will be most amusing.
All well down there, sir?
Why don't you answer? Cat got your tongue? She must have passed out. Barely keeping us awake myself, head spinning.
All well down there, sir?
Hello up there. This is your leader. I'm alive. This is your leader. Can't you hear me? Pull me up faster. Something is down here in me. They're coming for me.
And now from the legendary Richard Matheson, Night Call. Up until now, the pattern of Ms. Ives' existence has been that of lying in bed or sitting in a wheelchair, reading a book or listening to the radio. Eating, napping, taking medication, waiting for something different to happen.
up early this morning.
Hello. Hello. What's the matter with her?
No answer.
Obviously.
I imagine they're pretty busy there this morning with the storm and all.
Oh, Miss Finch. This is Elva Ives speaking.
Yes, Miss Ives. Can I help you?
You can. Last night, about 2 a.m. in the morning, my telephone rang. I answered it, but no one spoke. I didn't even hear the receiver being put down. Not even a dial tone, just silence.
Well?
The same thing happened a few moments later.
Well, Miss Ives, that storm just about ruined our service. We've been flooded with complaints about fallen wires and bad connections. I'd say you're pretty lucky your telephone works at all.
Would you say someone was trying to call me and the connection was bad because of the storm?
That's as good an explanation as any right now, Miss Ives. I'm sorry. I wish I could be of more help, but the way things are right now...
Well, is it likely to happen again?
I couldn't say, Miss Ives, it might. It depends on what's causing it, of course. If it does, though, you just call me and I'll have a special check run on it. Will you do that?
Oh, very well.
Good. I'll wait to hear from you. Goodbye, Miss Ives.
Goodbye. Margaret?
Yes, Miss Ives?
Did you call me last night?
At 2 a.m, not me.
Oh, well, I thought you might be checking on me. But I don't pay you for nights, do I?
Here's your mail, Miss Ives.
Oh, thank you. The light and the water bills. Oh, how stimulating.
You just heard from your sister a few days ago, didn't you?
3 weeks.
Has it been that long?
Yes, it has. 3 weeks and 2 days, to be exact, Margaret. Nobody cares whether I live or die.
Oh, sure they do, Miss Ives.
You don't understand. You don't know what it's like to be alone.
Oh, now, Miss Ives.
Hello? No. Margaret, come here, quickly.
What is it, Miss Ives? There's nobody on the line.
Listen, listen. See if you can hear the receiver being put down.
Not a thing.
Wait. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. I'll call Miss Finch and have them check on the line.
You really think it's necessary?
Yes, I do. Am I to have calls like this coming in all the time?
But if it's a breakdown, they'll fix it. There we are, all comfy.
Thank you.
Don't let those calls upset you, Miss Ives. I'm sure whatever the trouble was, the repairmen have fixed it by now. Oh, why not leave the receiver off the hook if it worries you? Then whoever it is can't call. Though I'm sure nobody will.
Thank you.
I'll see you in the morning, Miss Ives. Good night.
Good night. Hello? What? Who's there? Who's on the line? Who is it? Who's there? Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Miss Ives. Are you sure it was someone saying hello? It could have been...
I tell you, it was someone. The same one who kept listening to me saying hello over and over again without answering back. The same one who kept making those terrible noises.
You have no idea, though, whether it was a man or a woman.
I've already told you there's no way of knowing. It might be either one.
Well, I'll have a man check your line as soon as possible. The crews are pretty busy right now on account of the storm, but...
But what am I to do if this person calls again?
Try to get their name if you can. If you do that, why, we can take immediate action, you see?
Yes, yes.
What did she say?
Nothing. It's obvious she doesn't believe a word I told her.
Oh, now.
As far as she's concerned, I'm just a nervous old biddy falling prey to my imagination. Well, she'll find out differently. I shall just keep on calling her and calling her until she does. Hello? Hello? What do you want? Well, if you won't speak to me, I shall hang up. I'll show you. I'll leave it off the hook. There. But if I don't let them call, I shall never find out who it is. Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
Hello.
Who is calling?
Hello.
Please, who is calling?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Hello.
Please.
Hello.
Margaret! Margaret!
What is it?
It's a man who's been calling.
How do you know?
He's just called me.
What does he want?
I don't know. He just keeps on saying hello over and over again. Hello, hello, hello.
Besides, you've got to stop this. You're working yourself up
over... nothing?
I didn't say that, Miss Ives.
You were going to.
Now, Miss Ives, I was not. I think I'd better put you in
your bed. I do not want to be put into my bed. I want to find out who this terrible man is who keeps calling me.
What did Miss Finch tell you? She told you it was a bad connection, didn't she?
It's not the connection. It's a man.
I didn't say it wasn't. But if he keeps saying hello, obviously he can't hear because of a bad connection.
He can hear me. I know he can hear me.
Then why don't you hang up? You don't have to listen. Just hang up. Is that so hard?
Over and over again. Hello, hello, hello.
There. Now you don't have to listen. Nobody can call you. Isn't that right? Leave it that way. If you want to make a call, just hold down the arm a second and dial. Isn't that right, Miss Ives? Miss Ives?
Why does he keep calling me? Why? Oh, that infernal dial tone. With the girl. She promised a man would check today and now the afternoon's nearly over.
Maybe he doesn't have to check here, Miss Ives. Hello? Miss Ives? No, this... Just a second. Here's Miss Ives. It's Miss Finch.
Yes?
About those calls you say you've been receiving, Miss Ives.
Say I've been...
Well, we sent a man out to trace them. I have his report here.
And?
He says he traced the difficulty to a fallen wire on the edge of town.
Fallen wire?
Yes, Miss Ives.
Do you mean to tell me that there were no calls?
Besides, there is no way that anyone could have phoned from that location.
But I'm sure a man has called me. There must be a phone there. There must be some way he could call.
Miss Ives, the wire is lying on the ground. Tomorrow our crew will put it back up and you won't be...
There must be some way he could call me.
But there is no one out there.
Out where? Where?
Miss Ives, it's the cemetery.
What's wrong, Miss Ives? What is it? What's the matter, Miss Ives? Tell me why you want to come out here to the cemetery, Miss Ives. You know it isn't good for you. If you hadn't made such a to-do, I'd never have come in the first place. What can there possibly be out here to see?
It's here.
Miss Ives?
It's him.
Miss Ives, what's the matter?
It's him. Brian.
Who? What are you talking about?
Brian. My fiancé.
Your fiancé?
He died a week before we were to be married. We were in a car together. I insisted upon driving. I was always insisting upon everything, determined to have my own way, dominating him. He always did what I said. Always. I lost control over the car. I drove straight into a tree. Brian went right through the windshield. He was cut to pieces. I was crippled. And now he's trying to reach me. And now he's trying to reach me. I can talk to him. I won't be lonely anymore.
Miss Ives, I can't leave you like this.
I'll be all right.
Good night, then.
Good night, Margaret.
You'll call me if you need me.
Yes, I will.
I'll be home all night.
Yes, good night. Good night, Margaret. Brian? Brian, are you there? Brian? Brian, if you're there, speak to me. It's Elva. Please speak to me. It's Elva. Please say something.
You said leave you alone.
But Brian, Brian, I didn't know it was you.
I always do. What you say?
I didn't know it was you.
Always what you say.
Brian, please. Please don't leave me. Please speak to me. I didn't mean to say... Brian? Brian!
Our final foray into horror is H.P. Lovecraft's Pickman's Model. Thank you.
Then call me mad, Elliot. If I don't like the tube, it's my own business. I just don't trust it. Anyway, we got to the arts club more quickly in a hansom cab.
But when I visited last time, we used the underground all the time.
I have my reason, and I don't need to explain them to you.
Sorry, Uncle. I didn't mean to upset you.
Fine. Then we'll say no more about it. Shall we go in? I could do with a drink.
Evening, gentlemen. May I take your coats? Good to see you again, Mr. Thurber.
Nice to be seen. Thank you.
Table for two?
Yes. Away from the crowd, if you can, please.
Of course. Over here, all right, sir.
That's fine, thanks.
Drinks, gentlemen?
Large brandy and soda.
Whiskey for me. No ice.
Well, how's Oxford? Enjoying your professors?
Oh, they're fine.
And the campus?
It's good. So many new people and places to see.
And the students of the female variety?
There are girls.
Anyone in particular?
No, not for me. I'm still playing the field.
Good. Just be careful. You wouldn't want to get tied down too soon. You've got your whole life ahead of you.
That's the way I look at it. So, have you seen Pickman?
Last time? About a year ago.
Really? No one's heard of him for quite a while.
I'm not surprised.
He did fall out of favor with folks.
Indeed.
Even with you.
Why do you ask?
It's just that the two of you were as thick as thieves, and now you seem nervous at the mention of his name.
Yes, we were,
Excuse me, gentlemen. Here are your drinks.
Thank you. Put this on my tab, and this is for you.
Thank you, sir. You're very generous. Anything else I can get you?
Oh, do your best to steer people away from us and freshen our drinks in a while.
I shall.
You know you can talk to me, Uncle Ned. If there's one thing I've learned at Oxford, it's to keep my mouth shut.
Well, maybe I should tell someone. Let's have a drink before we get any deeper. Cheers.
Cheers.
You know I was a great fan of Pickman's art and became a close friend. The others in the art community were wary of him and deeply jealous of his talent. They never understood his compulsion to paint what he did. They thought the things he created belonged on the cover of weird tales. But there's a difference between the great masters of the macabre and some pulp magazine artiste who splashes around blood to invoke horror. The others never saw what I did. That only a great artist can paint something truly terrifying to behold. Something that takes your breath away. And Pickman was one of the best.
His paintings were otherworldly and ghastly, especially the faces, so eerie and so real.
Like the faces Goya painted. Didn't you ask him once where he got his ideas from?
Yes, he looked at me and threw back his head and cackled in laughter, as if the question itself were the most foolish thing to ask.
Maybe not as foolish as you think.
Do you remember when he unveiled Vampire's Feast?
Do I? The critics were up in arms. The whole of the art world went against him.
But not you.
No. In fact, after that, I became a devotee. His utter belief in himself was intoxicating. He had his vision, and the rest be damned. So I was thrilled when he invited me to his studio. Over the next 6 months, we ended up spending so many nights there, drinking, smoking, and chatting into the early hours, my mind ablaze with his wild art theories drenched in mystical lore and cosmic speculations. He was opening up and had begun to confide in me. Then he suddenly disappeared.
Disappeared?
Yes. He just vanished. I had no idea why, and of course wondered if I'd done something to scare him off.
Well, he was an odd bird.
Then a few months later, without warning, he showed up banging on my door in the middle of the night. I let him in, and without a word of where he'd been, he began rambling at me that he had made a breakthrough in his art, and that if I could promise to keep my mouth shut, he would take me to another studio he'd rented under a different name, where I would truly see something beyond the pale.
A secret studio?
How could I resist?
What did he use it for? Salacious models? A mistress? Drugs?
Pickman? No, none of those. But he had his reasons. Reasons he told me as we drove in a cab through the dark and foggy streets into one of the oldest parts of the East End of London.
Don't you love fog? It cloaks the night in such mystery.
I don't know about that, but it is bloody freezing.
Come on, man. It's the perfect night to show you the fruits of my labor. Here, drink up. I brought a flask to keep us warm.
Why did you pick such a broken-down, out-of-the-way place?
Precisely because it is. I have discovered the thing that was holding me back.
Which was?
That in order for me to escape the limits of my imagination and paint my opus magnus, I needed to work somewhere very, very old. I had to absorb the atmosphere of a place where the bricks and foundations were deeply soaked in the lifetimes and sufferings of many, many souls. Only then could I pierce the darkness and see the creatures hidden in its folds.
As Pickman continued, the cab drove on and on into the misty night. He was all fired up, babbling about some new techniques he discovered. I just sat back, happy to bathe in his attention and let his sermon wash over me. Drinking deeply of the brandy he offered, I soon lost all sense of time or where we were, till eventually the cab stopped and he announced,
"Here we are."
He paid the cabbie, and we got out into the most deserted, oldest, dirtiest alley I'd ever seen in my life. Rubbish and rotting leaves lay all around. A single street lamp's orange light barely illuminated the crumbling houses on both sides. The place looked like it's been abandoned.
It mostly has been. I've rented it under the name of Dr. Morbius.
Your sick jokes will be the end of you.
I deserve no less for my wickedness. Let's go inside.
The whole place looked like it was being held together by the grime which covered it. Several of the floorboards were so rotten, they had holes large enough to lose a small child in.
The windows were all boarded up when I moved in, and I left them that way. I don't need daylight for what I do. I'm set up in the cellar where the inspiration is thickest.
You don't sleep here, do you?
Come downstairs. I'll show you my studio.
The weight of time had sloped the stairs to one side, and as we descended, the deep, musty smell of old brickwork and earth filled the air.
There are secrets in these ancient basements, things from which the modern world has lost touch. But they're still here, waiting beneath us.
I shivered slightly and braced myself for what I was about to see. I need not have worried, for what greeted us was a warmly lit basement, full of the usual paraphernalia and pools of any artist. A couple of unfinished canvases set on easels, and beside them a table covered with pots of paint and brushes soaking in jars. Displayed along two of the walls were etchings and drawings I'd seen before. Studies of various creatures from Pickman's imagination. You had me going. I was prepared for the worst, but these works are quite familiar to me.
Indeed, but there are more.
Along the third wall, I spotted a camera and the equipment to develop photos, a series of which hung on pegs to dry, and were shots of various old churchyards, cemetery vaults, and tombs.
Those I use for reference in my paintings.
He ushered me towards a red velvet chair that had seen far better days, poured whiskey into two crystal glasses, and handed me one.
Welcome to my Galleria Nocturna.
To the Night Gallery. Pickman, I have questions.
Of course.
Where have you been?
When you disappeared, I was worried about you.
My apologies. When I vanished, I was at an impasse. The elation I felt when Vampire's Feast caused such a stir had over time evaporated, leaving me depressed and, oh, so desperately lost. What was next? How could I top that masterpiece of the macabre? Night after night, I'd stare at the blank canvas and nothing would come. It drove me to despair. Unable to paint or sleep, I took to walking for hours and, one night, found myself in this neighborhood, outside this house, overwhelmed by the feeling of having come home.
Home?
That very night, I rented this place from Mrs. Dorcher.
Your blind Irish landlady?
Yes. Here, have another whiskey.
No, I should slow down.
Nonsense! We must toast to Mrs. Dorcher.
To Mrs. Dorcher. Is she around?
Not now, but maybe she will be later.
She sounds like quite the character.
Believe me, she is.
So, where are these new works which will shatter the mind?
Behind you.
I turned around and faced the last wall of the basement, which for some reason had been covered with a large bedsheet. I don't understand. What am I looking at?
One evening, soon after I had moved in, I was down here. It was late, around midnight, and I was sketching, trying to find some new inspiration, when I heard something. Then I realized it was coming from behind that wall.
At first I thought it must be rats, but as the sound persisted,
the clearer it became, this was something else. Something more purposeful than rats scurrying around in their nest.
Purposeful?
Now, this wall was different from the others. There was no brickwork, instead a layer of aged mortar covered it. I placed my ear on it to listen, and what I heard caused the hairs on the back of my neck to rise up.
What?
I realized the scratches were from something trying to get my attention.
Then I found a small hole, an inch in diameter, in the center of the wall, which I knew had not been there before. The hole seemed to be several inches deep, and I could feel a slight draft of air from it. Then my heart almost stopped in my chest when I heard the sounds of a woman crying. I reeled back and sat on the other side of the studio.
You can't be serious. You must have been mistaken.
That's what I began to think. Once I'd calmed down. So, after a stiff drink to gather my wits, I picked up a lamp and peered into the darkness of that small space, seeing something which defied all common sense.
What?
A keyhole. Now I had to know what was underneath. So I returned the next night with a pickaxe. Hours went by as I worked like a common laborer, clearing away the concrete facade. My arms and hands grew tired, then exhausted, bloody and blistered, but I could not stop until I had excavated this.
He pulled back the sheet with all the flourish of a stage magician, revealing something obviously belonging to a much older building. This wall was primitive in comparison, constructed from larger rougher granite stones which had been cut by hand. At its center was a wooden door, around which a stone arch was intricately decorated with some sort of arcane symbols. My God, Pikmin, how old is it?
Maybe as old as the time of Elder Gods?
Surely you're not saying.
Come, I'll show you my newest works of art.
He pushed open the door. He produced an old hurricane lamp and lit it with a match. Then he stepped through the doorway into the blackness beyond, swallowed by the ebony darkness like a firefly on a moonless night. He slowly made his way around and lit a myriad of candles, which bathed the second larger chamber in a flickering glow.
Are you coming in?
I was still framed in the door, hesitant to cross the threshold.
Please, Ian, join me. I need you to see these.
Then, as always with Pigman, I could not say no. So even though my mind screamed for me not to, I took a deep breath and stepped into the chamber, a step I wish I'd never taken.
Are you all right, Uncle?
I need to.
Uncle?
I'm sorry, Elliot.
Don't be silly. It's my fault for asking.
No, you were right to. I have to tell somebody.
Let's get another drink. Waiter, another round, please.
Of course, gentlemen. Coming right up. Anything else, gents?
No, thank you. Take your time.
I was so sure nothing could shock me. Little did I know what awaited me in that room.
So, what was the place like?
Once I stepped in, it took a while for my eyes to adjust to the flickering candlelight, the glow of which still left so much in shadow that the walls seemed to stretch endlessly into the darkness. The sound of our voices reverberating what seemed a much larger chamber. What is this place, Pigman?
I'm not sure, but we seem to be in an antechamber of some kind.
An antechamber?
When I first came in here, an overwhelming sense of déjà vu washed over me. Images flooded my mind, and I began drawing them. The first was this.
He began to unfurl a series of rolled-up sketches on a nearby table. What the devil's that?
It seems to be a map to a series of tunnels.
Tunnels to where?
Well, there are ancient stories about tunnels which connect the graveyards of London.
Oh, come on, you can't be serious. That's just an old wives' tale. Probably used to scare children to sleep.
Is it? London is an ancient city which has forgotten more history than most other places live through. Some of it very dark indeed. What do you know about ghouls, Ian?
Ghouls? Surely you're not saying that this is something to do with the supernatural.
I didn't say they were supernatural.
Then what?
What if there really had been, at one time, creatures that fed on the flesh of corpses?
I was caught out by the question because he appeared to be serious.
In the Necronomicon, the mad Arab called them ghouls.
The Necronomicon?
It's an ancient black magic grimoire. He was obsessed with the damn thing. He said it was...
the darkest of all the books on the blackest magic.
The source of his artistic inspiration for many years.
What were the other drawings he showed you?
Even now, Elliot, it's painful to recall, because as I looked at them, the strange feeling came back that they were looking at me. They could see the fear in my gaze and were reaching out to taste it.
The pictures were actually affecting you?
Oh, yes.
Do you feel up to describing more of them?
The next was a blasphemous horror he called The Picnic. A sketch of a father and mother, dressed in neat Victorian clothing, sat amongst the tombstones of an old church's graveyard, whilst their toddler played in front of them on the slab of a grave. Now, from another artist, it would have been an idyllic scene of family life. But from Pigman's pen, it was a tableau of terror. For the closer you looked, the more unsettling it revealed itself to be. Firstly, there was something in the way the couple held their bodies, like predators leaning slightly forward, like tightly coiled springs ready to pounce. Then their pointed ears, large yellow eyes, and cruel-looking mouths crammed with sharp-edged teeth which gave them the most terrifying of grins. As they smiled proudly at their child, who was gnawing hungrily on a human spinal cord, as if it were a delicious barbecue rib, the red juice which had once been lifeblood, dripping like gravy, leaving his young face and infant clothes splattered with scarlet blotches.
Dear God!
It left me speechless with disgust and fear. And once more, as I looked at the drawing, I could feel my life force seeping away from me.
You make it sound as if they were feeding off you.
I believe they were.
So, what did you do?
Nothing! I was like a fly in a web, unable to look away. As one after another, he showed me a bestiary of ghouls from across the ages, depicted in cold grey tombs or shadowy places, ancient ruins and even household cellars. Each one gorging themselves on human flesh in an endless array of depraved and disgusting ways. Each image slicing a little more into my sanity and sucking deeper on the very marrow of my fear.
You know, they've always been amongst us. They are the dark truth behind the great lie.
Did you hear that?
What?
Didn't you say you first heard a woman crying down here?
It's just the wind. Here, let me light a fire to warm us as we chat about such chilling things.
Pigman took up the lamp and walked further into the shadows of the chamber, until he came to a small circle of stones in the darkness, in which he placed kindling, then wood, and soon a small fire was burning. You said they are the dark truth behind the great lie.
Yes, the lie that we rest in peace.
I don't understand.
Don't you see? We are consumed.
You mean our corpses are eaten?
Yes, the terrible truth that we have deliberately forgotten. A far distant memory buried in the folklore of ghoul.
As the flames grew in strength and cast light further into the chamber, my eyes began to make out the outline of a very large framed painting, in front of which Pickman stood, his eyes glowing in the firelight.
I call it La Mère d'une Mère.
A mother's love?
I think it might be my greatest work of all.
It was indeed his magnum opus, and it broke my mind.
Come closer.
And even though I was terrified to see what was on the canvas, I found myself staring at it and screaming in primal terror.
What was it that made you scream so?
It was her on the canvas, a cadaverous abomination with piercing yellow eyes which stared out at me. The breath of life so fused into the canvas, it was as if the painting was breathing. Pickman suddenly turned and stared off into the darkness, listening intently.
What was it?
Nothing. Just some rats.
He changed the subject.
So, what do you think? Isn't she magnificent?
Indeed she was. I was utterly captivated by this hideous, rotting creature with a razor-sharp smile, who in her bony, disgusting claws cradled a small baby in a mother's embrace.
Did I tell you my real mother abandoned me? She left me on a wooden bench at Hobbs End tube station.
And the face of the sleeping babe was Pigman's.
What?
A chilling thought swallowed my soul. As I realized, he wasn't strictly human.
Shh. Now you'd best be quiet.
He put his hand over my mouth.
We must have awakened her.
Now I knew why they'd buried the door.
She's lived down here alone in the tunnels for a long, long time.
It was to stop something from getting out.
The night I was abandoned on the deserted platform, she came and lifted me to her teat. And I drank deeply. For a dark mother's love is better than no love at all.
The stench of putrid decay filled my nostrils, and a sense of impending doom overtook me. Then Pickman smiled, pulled out a gun from his jacket, and stepped into the darkness.
I'll be right back.
Then, pandemonium broke out.
No, Mother, no! He's just a friend!
Everything after that is a blur. The sound of the gunfire must have broken the trance the painting held me in, because I found myself outside on the street, running for my life and didn't turn round. After that, I never saw Pickman again.
No wonder you're nervous of the underground. What do you think happened to him?
It's all the same now, for he's gone back into the fabulous darkness he loved to paint. And the arms of his loving mother.
Thank you.